Hello, friends! Welcome to episode 259 of Storyteller Conclave. This is a show all about helping you run the best tabletop role-playing game that you can, whether you're a new storyteller, a dungeon master learning the craft, or an experienced storyteller looking to take your game to the next level. I am Sarah.
I'm Rob.
How are we doing, Rob?
I don't know. How are you doing?
I'm doing phenomenal, actually.
Okay.
I'm gearing up for my wedding next month. Little less than a month away.
It is a little less than a month away.
And, especially you, but like just basically all of my friends are just really jumping in to like help throw in all the extra little accoutrement that I'm just not good at, and I'm not good at planning these things.
No, we're
and
trying.
I was like, I want a small wedding and like a decade of listening to me minimize my own needs and say, oh, I don't want you guys to make a big deal out of me. I don't want to be the center of attention. You found the one moment where I can't not be the center of attention.
Nope.
And you said we are going to pile upon all of our affection now, and we're going to make this the best damn wedding, whether you want it or not.
Well, it's not only that, but, like, I also did this for, like, I don't know, 20 years with, like...
So it's, like, second nature to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, like, I've worked in the industry, I've been wrapped around it, and so it's, like, I've seen all the horror stories. So it's, like, did you think about this? Oh, wait, did you think about this? Oh, that's right. Oh, did you think about this? Oh, God, we got it. It's
right.
covered.
Right,
yeah, so, like... I was hoping that actually tonight Vicky was going to talk to you about the cake topper you got, so you could talk to Michelle about the size of the cake topper so that she doesn't have to think about topping your cake.
Oh, right. Actually,
see,
these
are the things that roll through my head because of you.
Yeah, that's fair. He sings in the live chat going, yay, who are you marrying?
Oh,
I love you, sweetie. I love you.
He's figured it out. Get out.
Oh, God.
It's coming for the call's coming from inside the house.
But no, it's really going great. And
it's fantastic.
Currently, my mood is overwhelmed by the love of my friends.
Aww.
So.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I was actually going to try to adjust the audio again, but then I realized that we are about to get on some serious soapboxes here
and go through
some hot takes.
Oh, today, man! Like, I don't know about you, but like, I'm so like tonight's episode. I was looking forward to so much, you know. And I mean, we've talked a little bit about how like one of the reasons why we're sunsetting the show is it's kind of losing its little bit of the luster. We got a little less gas in the tank every show, you know, after another. And you know, I'd rather end the show while I still like it than grow to resent it. You know?
Right.
But man, tonight just filled me with such anticipation.
Yeah.
We shouted out to you guys last week to give us your hot takes, and we didn't actually get anybody who contacted us on Twitter. I double-checked even, like, right before the show, just to make sure we didn't miss anybody. But, man, our Discord exploded.
It was fantastic. Like, everybody
You have so many opinions.
And I love them all. I love that all of you have them, and I love that everyone just let them happen.
Yeah.
Some people had a few minor comments, but it wasn't like nobody shat on anyone. We'll take care of that. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Now, I want to say, before we get started on any of this, I want to give the disclaimer. We're going to get animated about this stuff. We may say that certain takes are absolute rubbish, blah, 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 blah. Okay. A lot of this is hammed up for cinematic effect.
Mm-hmm.
We're just doing it to be funny. Please, if we call your take hot trash, don't take it personally. You are a good person. We like you. You're welcome on our Discord, and we love you, and we respect your opinion. We may disagree with it, but that said, some of your opinions are hot trash.
Some of them.
And we are going to fight you on the air live tonight in the steel cage.
Yeah.
But some of you also have an amazing take. You are based, and
about those too.
And you will be sainted.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Sometimes in the like previous comment destroys you, and yet we bring you back and revivify instantaneously.
Exactly. So. See.
All right. So we're gonna just kick this right off in order that we received them.
Yeah.
Because we got a number of these because we cracked it right at the beginning, and I think it's fantastic. I think all of these are great. Some people threw some serious gauntlets down, which is great.
Which is great.
So let's start with the Mad Elf. I also see if Sarah will challenge you with a knife. I would never challenge Mad Elf with actual steel. That man is dangerous.
Yeah.
And not in the, like, oh, like, you know, give him a blade, you know, he's dangerous, give him two and he thinks he's a god. No, no, I've actually seen this man physically fight in full armor.
No, actually studies real, legitimate, like, longsword fighting.
Yeah,
and, he's... And knows his way around
the
blade.
He really, really does. Yeah, his whole thing was, no one can fight Hetsuero about Hero being the best generic mechanic system. She has brought me into full suede fold, and I will knife fight over that. So, this is basically, he was a Hero fan. Like,
oh,
the
he was
Hero
a
system.
Huge Hero system fan.
Now,
yeah.
for God, for those who don't know, Hero is quite aged.
Oh, God, I want to say from the 90s, at least?
Might even be a little earlier than
that. A little earlier than that in the 80s, yeah.
At least hard roots. And he would talk about it constantly. I remember when I first met him, that there were conversations about it then, and he would tweak things and adjust things and just expand upon it. And then as we progressed through other games and stuff, he would reference it all the time. So for him to step into the fold of Suede being the ultimate system, I think is a testament to understanding where he sits in gaming.
Yeah, exactly.
And where
yeah.
it sits.
It's always fun to watch, like, kind of an old grognard, you know, who's you know, seen literal decades of gaming, look at a new system, and instead of going, you know, it's a newfangled system,
mm-hmm.
I like my old ways, I like rolling right. billions of dice and taking 5 years in a calculus class to figure out if a shot hit,
mm-hmm.
and go like, oh no, this is objectively better.
Oh, look, I can play the game instead of mechanicking the game.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, he hard fell in love with it. I like to joke a bit about how, you know, you're, as a storyteller, you're always a game teacher,
mm-hmm.
and your players never bother to learn the rules. I mean, he walked in with his own rule book, session one, and was like, yeah, no, I'm going to take this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to use this obscure rule that you only kind of know, and mm-hmm. It's going to have this outcome. And I was like, oh wow, please say that to me again. It was like yeah.
It, I think that right there says enough about some of the players, like we've talked about, is like when a player comes to you knowing the rules as well as they do, or even attempts it at mm-hmm. a hard enough level where you're just like, talk nerdy.
Right.
Keep going.
Just talk nerdy to
just
me.
Just keep talking nerdy. You're doing great.
Yep.
So all right. Maximus Prime. Based on our conversation here, other storyteller woes, I guess it's a hot take since no one really is agree with me, but I might be wrong. If players are fully aware of the situation that the GM lays out and players still choose to do something reckless, in my opinion, not or totally not bright ideas like Don Quixote attacking a windmill, they should accept the consequences without the need of the GM to retcon or save the game in some fashion. So these are the situations where, like, you bring in the big bad guy to have, like, at a dinner party, and one of the players, like, and it's the king's dinner party, right?
Yeah.
They're sitting across the table from you, and, like, one of the players just, like, I leap across the table, breaking a glass, and try to stab him.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, okay, you're at a dinner party at the king's castle. Like, you're trying to understand that, like, this is the situation. You didn't miss where you were. No. I'm gonna kill him.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Back in high school, I remember somebody brought in a fledgling internet when it was, like,
yep.
still all dial-up modems and
sure.
stuff.
Sure. Oh
like
yeah. Yeah.
Somebody brought in a list of 100 famous last words from role-playing games.
Oh my god.
And there were two that were right next to each other on the list.
Okay.
And it was, I bet he's a real wimp without Mjolnir. And the second one was, he looks like a wimp.
Yeah.
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 So, I it's all that's going through my mind right now is,
makes
like,
sense.
If you're going to taunt Thor
right.
to his face, like the actual Thor, yeah, you deserve everything that's coming to you. I don't think this is a hot take at all. I personally don't, like, I don't really like retconning or saving the party. I think there is there's an argument to be made for trying to figure out how a story can continue.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you do something really stupid and then you get TPK'd because of it, because mm-hmm. of the logical consequences, you are not trying to be a mean storyteller and you know, adversarial DM sort of stuff, you know.
Right.
You're not going out of your way. You're just literally going, okay,
right.
I warned you, the NPC warned you, you've been warned in and out of character that this is a disastrous course of action. Let's roll some dice and mm-hmm. see how bad it is. You deserve everything you get. I don't think this is a hot take at all.
I think for me that, and this is kind of my loop around on this, is that DMs often have an idea of where they believe the story is headed, and that's what they kind of plan for, especially with games like D&D, where, like, having what's next ready at your fingertips because you need maps, you need terrain, you need, you know, you need to know the NPCs who are going to be there. Or who might be there, depending on which direction they take. And for to have a player who literally just does something that wrecks that flow,
mm-hmm.
your reaction is like, no, don't do that. Like, you want to, because you're an active participant. Likewise, when you have a player at the table who wrecks the flow to the other players, we're like, you did not. Like, okay, like, how do we say we're not with this guy?
Right.
You know,
right.
that whole logic that sits behind it, it makes you want to fix it in some way. And we wouldn't have terms like retconning and fixing and this idea if there weren't people who focused on that aspect mm-hmm. instead of who were unprepared. I shouldn't say who didn't, but who might be unprepared to think fast enough to come up with another solution.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like,
that's
fair. I could now comfortably say, after all these years and dealing with social things like that, that if someone leapt across the table to try and stab somebody, it's probably not, you know, even if they did make contact with the big bad guy, like, he's got guards. The king has guards, and you just ruined his dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
You're out. Like, you're thrown out the door. Like, I'll give the other characters a chance in, like, an antechamber to explain to the head of the guards why they're not with that guy anymore, and he's crazy, right?
Yeah.
You know, but they're going to be like, you need to take his drunk ass home, mm-hmm. right? But, and to step away from that situation. But it takes a lot to pause, remember that the story is a group story, and that the players need to handle players and characters need to handle characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And if the guy was just like, my character would, you know, he justifies it like, you know, this guy killed my family. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to let him go. I'm not going to have dinner with him.
This is the only chance I've ever, like, been arm's reach of
right.
him.
Now and I've told never. You all that I was literally going to stab him if I was within arm reach of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is happening.
Okay, you know, I get it.
Sure, great. But it's still an event that occurred, and you're now going to have to deal with the consequences of, number one, the king being quite upset with you about it, and you mm-hmm. having to work around that, and B, that guy knowing he got your goat.
Yeah, yeah.
More than just your goat, and now everybody knows that, like, anything you say against him is just you being a jerk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did he do? He wasn't the one who reached across the table to try to joke you out after giving a nice toast to the king.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the king's son,
mm-hmm.
you know. And like, it's that kind of a thing. So, yeah, I agree, but I also think that there's a certain sense of concern, and that I think that comes with experience.
Yeah.
But a lot of storytellers just don't have it, and maybe have gotten bad experience about doing those types of things. So
I also think that a lot of storytellers are hesitant to just end their game session early.
Yeah.
And just be like, okay, you reach across the table to throttle him, and everybody kind of, you know, leaps into action in disbelief, and we're going to end there because I need to figure out what I'm going to do about this.
Right.
You know, and that's perfectly okay to do.
Yeah.
Now, a side note, Hulavu in the live chat here says we should rate our takes on a heat scale from Bell Pepper to Carolina Reaper.
See, I think
I dare say the top of that should be Pepper X, by the
way. I think we should each have our own hot scale.
Yeah.
What would be your hot scale?
I mean, I'm going all the way to Pepper X, you know. But that's...
So you're staying in a flavor hot scale. I might have to find a different scale.
Pepper X is like 4 million Scoville or something like that.
It's still a flavor scale of... So you're putting something in your mouth.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I'm thinking, like...
Because it's a spicy hot take.
Sure. I don't know. I'm thinking I need a different scale because, like, I don't do that level of spice.
Like, I don't top either, out pretty man. High. Jalapenos are way too intense for me.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Just like 2,000 Scoville.
But like sour, we know.
But like you know of it. You've watched more than one episode of Hot Wings or of First We Feast. The Hot Ones.
Hot Challenge. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen a few of them.
Yeah.
I've seen a few
so,
of them.
So you know right. that.
That's fair. That's you fair. Know. All right. That's fair. So I would say Mad Elf. I would say is mild, like almost sweet.
Yeah.
His original one. This one here.
Yeah, he's the honey barbecue of hot sauces.
I would say this sits probably at like there's a little bit of heat to this one because there's some controversy in the sense of like whether you
players
should
deserve sitting. What they get, you know.
Yeah. Maybe like Frank's. Like yeah. it's noticeable.
Yeah, it's like Cholula to me.
It's I think Cholula is a little spicier in comparison, but
nah.
It's definitely flavor, and everybody understands that.
You only say that because your stomach tries to kill you.
That's true. There was a time when I really liked spice. I still love Thai. Like, yeah. Don't get me wrong. All right. Miki,
all right.
Theater of the Mind.
Theater of the Mind, playing without a map whatsoever, turns the GM into a puppeteer of everyone involved in the fight. Great advantage for their storytelling, but frustrating for the players, as the GM can make up distances, cover options, number of close enemies, etc. on the fly. In Sunshine actually comes in to back Miki up. This hot take is fire, and I absolutely agree. My ADHD absolutely precludes Theater of the Mind gaming, and I'm not alone. The first time I played a table with maps and tokens was like, oh my god, it's actually a group activity now, and not just me participating in a story that's mostly by the DM. I really wish games like Powered by the Apocalypse, Fate, Blades in the Dark, Traditions would encourage people to at least make little tokens or put a backsplash from DeviantArt on the screen and at least set the scene a little.
See, I see that it's two layers. I see that hot take as two layers. Miki's hot take, I think, sits a little fiery. Here.
Okay.
I think we've started to move into the Taco Bell sauces. You know, you can put it on something, but, you know, eating it's still going to be a little uncomfortable. So, for me, Theater's the Mind's Eye, I think, is an advantageous tool when tactics and group cohesion doesn't matter. Now, that in that sense of Theater of the Mind's Eye, I am not saying you don't need aids to assist. I'm not saying that it doesn't help to have, like, a picture of a character or an NPC or the space or anything like that. I think all of that adds. Having props is a fantastic thing for Theaters of the Mind's Eye,
mm-hmm.
right? But you don't necessarily have to block out in cubes every square inch of the building and make sure that the map has all the components to it.
Oh, sure, but there's a middle ground though, where you can just like, on a whiteboard with 2 minutes, you know, mm-hmm. with a dry erase marker, and even if you don't have miniatures or anything like that, just little torn pieces of paper, you know.
Well, and I think to the degree and in with Sunshine's comment, I've only ever played Fate games that did that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would not know a Fate game if there wasn't something on the table, a 3x5 card and a box drawn, saying we're here and these are the things
yeah,
that make up the scene.
Defining what the zones are, yeah.
Right. Like, that is Theater of the Mind's Eye, mm-hmm. but in a very open sense.
But it's not, because you're not depending on your mind's eye to see where the boundaries, where the relevant boundaries to the rules are. I mean, here's the thing. Fate is abstract enough that you just use zones,
right,
to things. So you don't need like the full-on miniatures right. and buildings and stuff like that for yeah. it. Cool if you have it, but like it's extraneous.
Right.
The rules actually tell you to draw like 3 boxes. You know, this is the warehouse, this is the office area, and this is the parking lot zones. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's as detailed as mm-hmm. Fate gets about it. So yeah, but it's no longer Theater of the Mind's Eye because you have a visual thing. You're not depending on your mind's eye. You're depending on your eyes to see what those zones are, who's in those zones, what aspects are in those zones.
See, I feel that's very degrees of mind's eye.
Okay,
but that's the thing is that you can't just say, and that's my hot take on this is that we live in varied levels of mind's eye. If I'm sitting down and playing Baron Munchausen,
mm-hmm.
right, That's 100% mind's eye. The only thing that's real is literally the coins that are moving between us. That is the that for us buying our turns to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, right? Likewise, the horror game, Dread.
Yeah,
is 100% mind's eye. You just have a Jenga tower. That's it, right? And to that degree, like even tiny tiny D6. Tiny Tavern is mind's eye. They don't discuss ranges in that at all. They don't even discuss zones because there's no need for zones,
mm-hmm.
right? So in that we're dealing with that. But I think as you step into things more and more at a more and more detailed level, you do end up at various levels of mind's eye theater. And to say that, like, just because you're drawing zones doesn't mean you have to, like, figure it out in your mind's eye. It's literally a box. It's not helping you know what that spaceship looks like or what's going on within that space. You're still having to craft it because you have to come up with opportunities in fate that don't exist on the table.
Yeah.
So your mind has to fill in the blanks.
All right. I was about to tell you that your take was trash.
No.
But...
But, step off. I got a knife.
But, yeah, okay, I guess... I mean, specifically
for fate.
The fact that you actually still have to imagine what fills in that box that represents the zone.
Yeah.
And that the zone itself is very abstract.
It's not for everyone.
I was very prepared to tell you that your take was trash until you said that.
I know. Yeah. I know. But yeah. Blades in the Dark is another example of that. It's unnecessary.
It's unnecessary. Yeah, and I think that's really what it comes down to, is that Miki and Sunshine's takes here are very dependent upon whether or not tactical movement and stuff like that, like you do in your traditional D&D,
mm-hmm.
is important.
Yeah.
Okay, is positioning simulation,
important. Simulationist games.
Right.
Or a simulationist mind frame in games that are not simulationists.
Right. Now, like, you know, talking about layers of abstraction becoming theater of the mind's eye, think of, like, the last chase scene that I put you guys through in, mm-hmm. in my Savage Worlds game,
yeah.
where the terrain is represented by playing cards,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I had a miniature that you could see represented the Marsh Tyrant that was chasing you.
Which was cool.
Which was cool, and you had your miniatures on those playing cards, but, like, it wasn't important what the marsh looked like and stuff mm-hmm. like that, you know? And then when we hit a clubs, which represented rough terrain, we made up on the fly what that rough terrain was because it wasn't narratively important until then, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I agree with this hot take, and I think it is a bit spicy.
I think it is very spicy.
I think this one's at least jalapeno spicy.
Okay.
I don't know if I would go habanero spicy with it, but, like, I think it's at least jalapeno spicy in that I think, you know, the implication that, like, GMs may be a little unscrupulous with it, of, like...
I think some are.
I know in my mind, because I wrote the scene, what it all looks like, and now I'm going to try to relate to you, and you have to operate off the incomplete information that I'm relating to you... and compile that, and then act on it.
I don't think that's a fault of the mind's eye.
I don't think it's a fault of the mind's eye. I mean, because you could humans.
Have that. You could have that same exact argument on a physical board in D&D, where the DM is just like, okay, well, here's the Great Hall, and some of it's miniature, and some of it's drawn on, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to go from here to here. Oh, can't you see there's a box there? You got to move around the box.
Right.
But, oh, I didn't have a box. Well, I didn't know it was there.
Yeah.
Argument right there.
Yeah.
Like, And again, that's a tactical simulationist game where that kind of stuff, sight lines matter. Mm-hmm.
But then I also want to I want to give a shout out to Sunshine here because the idea of visual aids as an accessibility tool.
Yes,
this is 100%. Something you yeah. and I like. I have asked you for exactly that because I don't process audio information
yep.
very well.
Yep.
You give me a description of a room, I will forget what you said at the beginning of the paragraph by the end of the paragraph.
Yep. Yep.
And so if you can just show me a picture or if you can at least sketch it on a piece of paper where the relevant details are,
mm-hmm.
I can fill in the rest.
Yeah.
But, man, like, even especially with NPCs, you know, that's mm-hmm. why we've got the NPC cards and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Give me a face.
Yep.
If I can see a face, I'll remember the character.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. No, I agree. I think when accessibility comes into play,
mm-hmm.
you have to accept that.
But I'm gonna give this take collectively a jalapeno spiciness because I think there are a lot of, especially like, you know, purists, I suppose, elitists mm-hmm. in the hobby that they don't want to make those accessibility arrangements. You know, they don't want to be flexible with their gameplay. They want to be like, well, my way is the best way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there are people who are adherents to Theater of the Mind's Eye where they're like, I don't need miniatures.
Yeah.
They're a crutch.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they have to be exactly what they are.
Well, those people, I say, may thy knife chip and shatter.
Ooh, may thy knife chip and shatter. All right. Next one?
We have a hot take from the live chat.
Oh, we do.
Knox in the Box says, Cholula is water. You get that trash out of here.
So we got Violent Menace. I'm not justifying.
Sean introduced me to Cholula when I first met him. I had never actually had it before. And we were dipping our Little Caesars Hot and Ready's mm-hmm. into it. Just to this day, it's just a comfort food for us.
Steve is the same way. Like, he goes to places like, do you have hot sauce? Like, oh yeah, what do you have? Frank's. Never mind.
That's not... I said hot sauce.
Yeah, like...
Cholula? No. El Yucateco habanero sauce? Perfect.
Exactly. Is that scene from X-Men? Yeah. So, all right. Violent Menace has a few hot takes that all came like shotgun blast.
All right, Violent Menace coming in here and just throwing down the gauntlet.
I feel strong about this.
Let's go.
All right. So Cthulhu Dark is more faithful to Lovecraftian than Call of Cthulhu because it's designed mostly for one shots, and all the Lovecraft stories were all written as self-contained stories, which is part of why Call of Cthulhu often devolves into pulp adventure. I can't discount that statement is true.
Okay, I can't accurately rate this for actual spiciness because I don't play Call of Cthulhu, so I don't have a gut reaction to someone called out Call of Cthulhu, right?
Well, first off, let's Cthulhu Dark is very, very light.
It's like a 4-page.
It's 4 pages and there's some covers in there, but it's literally available online.
Yeah.
If you're a COC fan, go look it up. It'll take you like 2 minutes to go through. But Call of Cthulhu as on the whole, I'll say this, is from the times that I have played it, most of the time, at least from the con side of it, it is one shoddy, very quick, dangerous. But I still find that most DMs DM it in a heroic sense. Which I don't think it deserves to be in any way. It should be horror.
Guys, read at least one Lovecraft story before running Call of Cthulhu.
I mean, it's spooky and it's creepy, but it's definitely hero.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So I can see where it devolves into pulp as an adventure.
Uh-huh.
And I agree. I dare say that statement is accurate for most things developed within the same design of... that Call of Cthulhu leans into. We always talk about games teaching you how to play them.
Sure.
Most games that move into adventure sit along the lines of pulp or heroism.
Mm-hmm.
Your characters last. They're meant to be heroes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's teaching you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's the difference between Call of Cthulhu, then, and Adventure, Tales of the Aeon Society? In a structural story sense, and the answer is one is creepy
mm-hmm.
and the other one is, you know, swashbuckly almost.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the difference between them. But they're adventure stories.
I think there's also a lot to be said about a system written for one shots that is propping up a horror story system, right? And if it's designed for one shots, you feel a lot less attached to your character.
Yeah.
And you're far less worried about the long-term longevity of that character, right? If you're playing Call of Cthulhu, you want your character to survive. You want your character to move on to the next story and get that experience and stuff like that. If you're playing a one shot, man, like, your character's gone at the end of the story anyways, whether they live or die. So, like, if they get eaten by the monster that's oozing beneath mm-hmm. the floorboards of the old attic, then okay, that sounds like a great way to go out in a Lovecraft story.
Yeah. Huluvu says, Call of Cthulhu is D&D in Halloween setting. First off, I'm going to say two things to that. Number one, you're not wrong. Uh-huh. Number two, that is just another reference that we all come back to D&D as the default.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
Yeah.
That is sad, but what you're saying is Call of Cthulhu is simulationist with a Halloween setting.
I mean, having read over, we spotlighted it.
We did.
We did, what, 7th edition or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was crunchier than I expected it to be.
It was way crunchier than I expected it to be.
Way crunchier than I expected it to be. So, I mean, I don't know that that's an unfair comparison.
Not at all.
All right, what else? Well,
hold on. So, that spicy take, flavor, heat.
That Call of Cthulhu is the flagship for Lovecraftian horror and doesn't do it as well as a 4-page one-shot mechanic? I would say that's jalapeno hot. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, and I agree with it.
I think it actually sits on a tie scale.
Okay.
Because, like, people are like, you have an expectation of what you think it is, and then they hand you Grandma's Cooking. Because you're like,
Do you want it spicy, or do you want it white people spicy?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That right there. And then they just look at you like, oh, you're one of those.
Right.
You play
right.
D&D. Got it.
Make him suffer.
So that's where I set that one at. Okay. All right.
Cortex Prime.
Hold on. Let's frame this right. Violent Mammoth Venice is our local Cortex Prime hype man.
Zealot.
He's
a Cortex Prime zealot. I love him.
Which is fine. We accept.
All right. So Cortex Prime. I'm sorry. I hope that your pronouns are he, him.
I apologize as well.
If I've misgendered you.
They. We'll continue with they.
Anyways.
It's
they, yeah. They
y'alls.
Are our
y'alls.
Y'all are our resident Cortex Prime zealot.
Cortex
Prime is the best system for basically everything narrative except horror, and it should be more popular. It's miles better than Powered by the Apocalypse. All right. I'm gonna make the first call that this is kind of a trash take.
Mm.
I'm gonna make the first call that this is kind of a trash take, and I will tell you why. Because it is a crap comparison.
Yeah.
And you should feel bad about it.
You should feel really bad about that.
All right. You can't put Cortex Prime against Powered by the Apocalypse. They are entirely different game systems trying to do entirely different things.
You said that wrong. One is a game system.
Sorry,
yeah,
one is the IKEA set of build your own games.
Correct.
Whereas, again, I agree with you that it is very powerful. It can do well. It's very flexible because it is very modular. You can build your own game system in exactly the way that you want to.
Yes.
But I think there's two really big flaws in here. First off, Powered by the Apocalypse, like I said, is a different, entirely different game system trying to accomplish something entirely different than Cortex Prime does narratively.
Yes.
Okay. It tries to be an extraordinarily rules-light system that focuses on fiction first. Cortex, for what it does, is still a heavier dice mechanic. I think if you'd have pitted this against Fate, if you'd have pitted this against Savage Worlds, because I think Cortex is basically just Fate and Savage Worlds had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That sounds about right.
Okay. If you'd have pitted it against either of its respective parent systems, I'd feel a lot better about this hot take.
I could see Cortex versus Fate.
Cortex versus Fate, absolutely.
I think that would be a valid fight.
Yeah, yeah. But picking on Powered by the Apocalypse is like putting Mike Tyson up against a 4-year-old and saying, like, the 4-year-old's a crap boxer. I mean, yeah, maybe, but it's not trying to,
but also, creatively, he's pretty amazing.
Yeah. The second problem I have with this is that, honestly, calling Cortex Prime the best at anything.
Yeah.
Because what is it?
It isn't.
You can make a bad system with Cortex Prime is unwieldy, that is bloated and stuff like that, because Cortex Prime gives you the tools to do it and says make your own system with it. So if you do that step poorly... You then have a crap system.
Or if it's just not accepted by your players.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So at that point, if your players are used to Powered by the Apocalypse and you try to introduce a poorly written Cortex hack to them, you're not setting yourself up for success there.
Correct.
I don't think this is a fair comparison. Your take is trash.
Yeah. So I would say this spicy take sits probably at the Frank's Hot Sauce level. It has heat, but there's no flavor.
Frank's Hot Sauce is the exact opposite of there. There's no heat, but it's all flavor.
Oh, funny how that works. It's completely misunderstood. Because, again, you're trying to compare Cortex to Powered by the Apocalypse. No one's going to understand you.
Fair enough.
Now, I'm going to step into the next one.
All right, go ahead.
Because I think this is where really my brain thought about this.
Uh-huh.
Powered by the Apocalypse games feel too loosey-goosey for me. I love that term. Characters' customization is usually kind of sucks, and it sucks that rolling 7 and 9 is always a success with a cost. 6 is 6 or less, totally failure, and 10 plus is a total success. It's too linear. Cortex is better because the players roll nat 1s, hitches, and the GM rolls nat 1s, opportunities, and you can have total success with opportunities, failure with opportunities, success with hitches, failures with some additional hitches, or just normal successes and normal failures if no 1s are rolled, or if the GM and or the players don't want to activate rolled 1s. What you're talking about, in the sense that you're, again, comparing a highly mechanical creation system,
mm-hmm,
with Powered by the Apocalypse, and I'm going to say this, Powered by the Apocalypse is a base-level system. It's not what it generates. Compare a generated Cortex system, any finished system,
mm-hmm,
to a Powered by the Apocalypse system like, I don't know, City of Mist, or Urban Shadows, or one of those. Try and find a direct comparison, and you're not going to be getting the same kind of mechanical bite back, because they're not doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to compare Cortex to something, compare it to 7C, second edition. That has an opportunity system in it. That has a complication system in it. There are, yeah, many systems that have that.
Hell, as far as I'm concerned, you're reaching for Legend of the Five Rings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Power by the Apocalypse as a core base never calculated it because it didn't feel that it was necessary in a gross, and I say gross, like as in gross and net, narrative system.
Mm-hmm.
It is a grossly narrative system, whereas Cortex is not a grossly narrative system, a set of system mechanics. It is simulationist in almost all spoken forms of it. There's nothing but calculations and mechanics to build upon within it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no light structure. There's nothing to say that you can step beyond this. They're all gateways. Now, that doesn't knock Cortex in any way. I think it's a great system for people who need levels of structure. And it sounds like that's what you found. And for me, I read this not so much as a hot take, but as a storyteller, you've not only discovered what you need,
mm-hmm,
to be comfortable telling a story, but also what your tables need.
Yeah,
and that's that is the wind that sits on top of all of that.
Yeah,
I will applaud you for your hot take. At the same time, stop trying to compare it to Powered by the Apocalypse. Go find something that is close to this hot take. Try it.
Yeah,
see if it just is a rounded version. Like, oh my gosh, this is just Cortex, but somebody else codified it into another system, because they might have.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing.
Sure.
There's a lot of these people switch companies very quickly.
I agree with most of that. I also just think it's a bad take, because you started off with a statement of it feels too loosey-goosey to me, which is a vibe.
It is.
Which is an opinion on a vibe, and then tried to combat that with facts and logic of how Powered by the Apocalypse dice system works versus Cortex's.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, are you going off vibes or are you going off of mechanics?
Right.
You know? It's fine. It's fine if your opinion is it's too loosey goosey and the character customization is flaccid. I get that.
Yeah.
I absolutely get that. But you can't then combat that with, and that's why it's objectively worse.
Yeah.
Because, you know, another system works in a way that I find more palatable.
Yeah.
Just don't play Power of the Apocalypse.
Or find something that's a finalized product.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
Yeah.
Look absolutely. At some of the finalized products. You might be surprised what people alter, much like they do in Cortex, when they get to the final. So.
But yeah, no, I mean, on a heat scale, I don't know if this is such a hot take. I mean, look, firing a shot across the bow of Power of the Apocalypse. Okay, it's a very popular system, or set of systems, I guess.
So it's a zinger?
It's a zinger. I'll call it jalapeno hot.
I'm going to put this at fireball, like a candy.
Like a fireball candy? Hot cinnamon candy?
Yeah, it's okay. Quick, it's over.
Makes your tongue feel all tingly. And then,
everybody knows about it.
And then it gets out of your way.
Yeah, it's a natural thing.
Okay, fair enough.
Then this next one's too fast. Fasco 1, first edition was perfect. I agree. Second edition was a cash grab. 100% agree. That's a hot take, but I 100% agree with that.
I have no frame of reference. I defer to your judgment.
All right, fair enough. We're going to... As hot takes go, I think that's literally a flash in the pan. That's sauteing something, the fire shoots off of it. That's the hot that's coming off of that one.
Opa! Exactly. And we're on to the next one. Not only does D&D suck... Oh, you say such sweet things to me. Not only does D&D suck, but any game that uses a D20 combat sucks, and I won't play or run it. Wasted too many hours of my life rolling and missing. Cortex Prime combats are way more fun, consequential, and often quite fast. The only thing I will argue with here is that it is not a binary choice between D20 combat and Cortex. There are so many other systems out there that do combat better than D&D. Cortex is just amongst them.
I agree. And I would say in the comparison of D&D, there are things that do it way better than Cortex. If you're trying to compare to make a D20 system better, You can find so many things that follow the same design as a D20 system that do it significantly better.
Yeah, I mean, I dare say at this point, try breaking away from Cortex and see what a couple other systems do for you. And you know, you'll find that there are other systems that have similar outcome mechanics that you may also like. Like try anything by Fantasy Flight, either the Star Wars or Legend of the Five Rings.
Especially the newer stuff.
Yeah, they have a multi-dimensional resolution mechanic where you can have success with complication, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And if you're looking to do something that, like, if you're... It sounds to me like you're trying to combat the norm little bit with this. You have Powered by the Apocalypse, which is the norm for narrative.
Uh-huh.
You have D&D, which is the norm for combat.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And you have Cortex, which solves all problems. And the answer is no. It's not like you either are Ford or your GM or your Hyundai.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's not how that works. They all do very different things
here. Yeah, I agree.
So there are variants, there's all kinds of subtlety that's out there, and there's a lot of indies who ignore the rules that everyone else plays by. And I encourage you to dig for systems that fit within the setting and feel, and then give them a fair shake and an examination. You may find that they were inspired by Powered by the Apocalypse, but they are not.
Right. And they may seal up a lot of the holes that you find with that system. So.
But it also feels like you're trying to find simulationist stuff as well as narrative stuff to compare to see how you can get it. And I would say explore. Mm-hmm. There's a lot out there to explore. Try things. They're going to be different. Radically different.
All right, we gotta step on this. We still got a lot of these.
We do.
Here,
all right.
So. Let's see here. The greatest flaw of Cortex Prime. Oh, there are flaws. Flaw of Cortex Prime is how front-loaded it is. Making your own character sheet and system from a toolbox is a lot to ask of most people. On Discord, people share theirs, but still.
I 100% agree. That's why I don't play Cortex.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
I don't have the time to build a system.
Literally, the only thing that stopped me from pulling out that book is that I don't have the, you know, multiple hours to piece it together.
And in all honesty, I won't even go to Cortex if I can find something that's already slimmed down, like Suede.
Agreed.
To meet the qualification that I need. If I need a combat system, I'm going to lean to Suede. If I need a narrative system, I'm going to lean to Powered by the Apocalypse or a number of other narratives that I'm aware of.
Sure.
I'm not going to look to Cortex until I don't have what I need.
Mm-hmm.
So. But I think it's great that it's out there.
Yeah, I don't think that's spicy at all. I think that's Frank's Red Hot.
That's fine,
right there.
Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition D100 rules are worse than Delta Green's blackjack rolling system, but Delta Green sucks because it is set up for you playing cops and alphabet soup agents. I won't get political, but I don't think I could enjoy running a game where cops or the U.S. government are the good guys. All right. I had this take.
I will get political. This is my podcast.
Yeah. We're going to break this into two.
Police are not your friends, and this is a based take. Absolutely.
So I'm going to take this in two takes. Number one, your opening statement, 7th edition D100 rules are worse than Delta Green's blackjack rolling system. Don't know them well enough, but the fact that you said D100, I'm done right there. You're right.
Yep.
So that's fine. But the second part of that, and I'm gonna say this because I've done enough research on Delta Green and the Alphabet Soup games, because there are a number of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly all of them run the exact same flavor truth that sits behind them, which is, if you're reading this and thinking you're supposed to be patriotic and the players are supposed to be believing that they're the good guys, you're doing it wrong. Have you even watched the intro to the most recent Helldivers 2 game?
Yeah.
That is how you should be looking at every night you play that game. Not that everybody should be tongue-in-cheek ridiculous, but the point is that you know what you're doing is probably wrong.
Probably wrong. You're in over your heads. You're gonna die.
Right. Like, are we the baddies? Should be a question that you're asking mm-hmm. while you're doing that. And that's how those games are built and designed. They're not a patriotic resell. They look like that for a reason.
Yeah.
And the way that they're built that way because of the fact that you have to be unquestioning to be able to question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key. Like, I was talking, actually, I was on Reddit, and somebody had posted about doing a Kids on Bikes game,
mm-hmm.
but it's not Kids on Bikes, but the same design, where you're all agents in a secret three-letter agency kind of a thing.
Sure.
And they were like, well, where's the limits? It's like, everywhere. You are Kids on Bikes in that, because there's so much you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
You're conformed by budget, you're conformed by your boss, you're conformed by, you know, local cops and jurisdictions and all kinds of... So, like, literally, you're Kids on Bikes trying to get this done. Yeah, I've got a 45 Magnum, but I can't draw it. If I do, I'm literally going to be sent to prison or a black ops site because I shot a civilian and now they have to clean it up,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I'm in trouble. So it's hilariously framed that way, and somebody was just like, oh my god, I've been looking at all of these Delta Green and Call of Cthulhu-esque games wrong. And he's like, yeah, there's limitations wrapped around everything. You should be, your player should be thinking they're building their characters in paranoia.
Yeah.
And then after that, they should be living every moment by a rule set. And if they're not, it's red tape
all the way down.
Yeah.
Yep.
They should be, you should almost go to the degree that, like, you know, turn in your badge and your gun, you know.
Right.
You blew up another city block. Like, how are we going to solve that? Like, Men in Black is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Right? So I think in this sense, It's a perspective issue
that's going on. Galactic kegger here.
Exactly.
Also, no cops at Pride, and they are not your friends. They are here to protect the status quo, not the law. Anyways, the DNA of D&D is colonialist. Medieval Europe was densely populated, while North America was hollowed out by settlers' smallpox. In D&D, you get to kill subhumans in sparsely populated lands, take their loot, reenacting genocide. Hard. Agree.
Yep.
I don't think this is a spicy take at all. I think. Well, okay.
No. This is a spicy take.
I think it's super spicy, but I don't. Yeah.
You agree with it. You're shoveling it in.
People will hate you because you tell them the truth.
We're literally pushing the wasabi onto our sushi with you. Let's just do this.
I am handing you more wasabi. I'm grating it fresh for you right now. So you can dish it out more.
Yeah. We're pinching the horseradish out of the jar and throwing it on top of the dogs with you.
There's a reason why Nazis became such a universal enemy in so many game systems, and that is because they are the closest in recent history humans have come to being so cartoonishly evil that we don't have to feel bad killing them en masse.
Yep.
But when you try to extrapolate something like that into a setting like D&D, where it is a heavy combat system and you want to be able to kill things constantly without feeling bad about them and asking yourself the moral questions of why or who are these people, you've only got so many Nazis you can do until you start inventing more. And we start reaching for cultural stereotypes in that, and that's why a lot of this sort of, like, racial sensitivity popped up in the early 2020s about D&D and why they had to kind of change their face a little
mm-hmm,
bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No, agreed. There's a much larger discussion. Mm-hmm. I actually sent you the video where Yahtzee went to Second Wind. They did a hot take on the cowboyism and Americanism in Fallout 4, the series.
Mm-hmm.
And there's such a beautiful framing of how capitalism altered everything in the U.S. between the 1930s and the 1970s.
Yeah.
And framed us in the suburban lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it mirrors much of this.
Yeah, agreed.
And there's a lot to be said there. There's agreed. A lot to unpack. I highly recommend. I'll actually throw the link in the Discord.
So I call that five alarm fire hot, and yeah. I am handing you another Molotov cocktail so you can make it six.
Enjoy. Enjoy.
Okay, Savage Worlds is Savage Worlds even generic if it can't run a campaign centered around courtroom drama or, I don't know, talking fish in the Great Barrier Reef or something based on Breaking Bad? Cortex Prime can. Bitch, I will cut you! Oh, you come for my boy. How dare you? How dare you, sir?
I apologize to all the people who are listening to this and just got the ear blasted.
Oh my god, no. No, absolutely not, sir. No, it can run all of those things. Savage Worlds is a phenomenally flexible system. One of the very first things it tells you how to do is create your own, like, species. And then it shows you how to create your own skills and stuff like that. It gives you a suggested list of skills, but you can use or discard any of them. It gives mm-hmm. you guidelines on changing the number of skills and therefore redistributing the number of skill points given to you by the core rules of things. It is not as build your own raw IKEA set mm-hmm. of, you know, it doesn't hand you an Allen wrench and a bunch of planks and say congratulations on your brand new role-playing system the way that Cortex does, but it is extremely familiar. It's extremely modular and flexible in ways that you can do all of these things if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think on surface it feels like Savage World isn't, but there is, because of the fact that it is lighter rules, and those rules are exceptionally flexible and universal throughout the system.
Uh-huh.
You're using the same rule to everything. Like, Tiny D6 is the same way. It's, oh, what do I do for this roll? Did you 2D6? Roll 2D6?
Yeah.
But I know what I'm doing.
Have you
have
tried
another
rolling...
one?
That sounds rough, buddy. Try rolling 2d6 about it.
Yeah, yeah. And but that's the truth. Is that when you get down, when you break those systems down to the simplest terms, it gets really easy to be flexible.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus having to find a rule set that will be functionally necessary.
Exactly.
Are there exactly. things that work better in that sense? Sure. Does Cortex have all of them? I could fight you on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. Hot take from the chat.
Oh, you want to go and do that one?
Yeah. I don't want to get lost.
Fair enough.
We've got a show sheet in front
Fair
of us,
enough.
But we have
Fair
but chat moves.
So. Fair enough.
Hot take. This is from Heatsink, my fiance.
Do I get to answer this one because you're biased?
No, I'll fight him.
Okay.
I'll fist fight him. He knows I'll fist fight him on this one.
I will
the
too.
Very first word, hot take, GURPS. Oh, right there already. We're gonna do this again, huh?
Yep.
All right. GURPS is the ultimate RPG system, leaving classics like D&D and even streamlined systems like Savage Worlds in the dust.
First off, I have to say that he said Savage Worlds is a streamlined system. Says chef kiss.
Chef kiss. let's break it down. Unlike D&D, which confines you to a fantasy corset.
Ooh.
Ooh. Poetic. GURPS is the high fashion equivalent of the RPG world. You can strut your stuff in any era, any universe, any genre. Your character isn't just a list of spells and attacks. In GURPS, you can fine-tune traits down to the most charmingly obscure phobias or surprising skills, offering a level of customization that makes D&D's classes look like off-the-rack suits.
Wow.
And compared to Savage Worlds? Sure, Savage Worlds is fast and furious, but it's like sprinting through the storytelling. GURPS is more like a marathon with strategy, depth, and nuance. You want to calculate the impact velocity of a thrown gnome or the economic fluctuations of a trade embargo in the space opera? GURPS doesn't just make it possible, it makes it work. Every detail is yours to command, making other systems look like they're playing with training wheels. So, the wedding's off.
No, it's not.
It's not. I love him.
It is
him.
Not.
I love him so much.
Because he has opinions.
He does have opinions. They're wrong, but he has them. God bless him. He has opinions. All right, look. If we're going to rehash this one, I love you. You're entitled to love the same games that you do. And look, your fun is not wrong. But this is my show, damn it. And your trash is so flaming hot garbage that I just... I don't want to have, you know, 17 rule books and a calculus degree to figure this stuff out. I do want to sprint through the storytelling because the minutiae of the of the percentages of fluctuations of the stock market that you're causing with your little trade embargo does not matter to me.
Mm-mm.
What is the story outcome to it? Does it accomplish its goal? In what way do the bad guys react to the good guys doing this to them, or vice versa? You know, let's move the story forward. And I feel like GURPS gets bogged down in so much of the minutiae of let's figure out the exact, you know, airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow, and doesn't worry about who threw the swallow and where is it headed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
It does not matter. What is the outcome?
Yeah. I think that GURPS sits too far into simulationists.
100%.
And that once you get to that level of simulationist, sure, let's go back and play D&D 2nd Edition with every single extra book. And I do mean all
every
of them.
Every single extra book,
because at that
yeah.
point, D&D does everything you need it to do. You want political intrigue? It's in there. Do you need castles and keeps? It's in there. Do you need followers? It's in there. Do you need literally a book of nothing but spells? It's in there. Do you need 17 new classes for your ranger? You got it.
Yeah.
Oh, you want 19 new flavors of elf? It's in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, any game system can get into that level of minutia because it creates additional lore dump.
Here are two counter hot takes for you, Heatsink. First off, GURPS suffers from the exact same problem Cortex does. It's a build-your-own system because there's too many damn rules and you have to spend days figuring out which ones you're going to omit. To get the stream down set of rules that you that are going to actually be playable at your table.
Yep.
What was my other hot take here? Substituting rules for character customization is honestly just TTRPG masturbation. I'm sorry, but if you think that spending 4 days picking out little minutiae of my character has a +1 to using toothpicks to get stuff out from between their incisor teeth is character customization. I don't know who that's for. I'm here to tell
stories.
It's
a totally different level of power gaming.
I'm power fantasy. Exactly.
It's a totally different level of power fantasy.
I'm here to tell stories and a minute little stat on my sheet that will come up precisely once in a 20 game campaign does not help me.
Yeah.
That's not customization. That's just masturbation.
That's finite.
Yeah.
That goes back to 2nd edition and handling your pack.
Far more depth to your character is going to be made by creating bonds and doing interesting things in the story than it is any stat on your character sheet.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, you're just playing a massive board game.
Yep.
Like, if everything's a mechanic, it's just a board game.
But, that said, I love you, and I understand that your need for rules and structure gives you defined toggles with which to interact with the game system, and I respect that.
Yeah. My concern, and this is my overt concern here, is the moment you bring up the fact that GURPS is important because it gives you that level of minutia, you need to examine how you run your games and how much control you give your players to understanding that minutia as well within whatever systems you run.
Yep.
That's the key. And that goes for Cortex Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're the person who is developing and designing a system, make sure your players know that that's what you're intending.
Mm-hmm.
You're intending a minutia-based game. And if you're like, oh, this is a narrative game in Cortex Prime, okay, so can I do whatever I want? Well, no, because this is the rules. Okay, so it's a simulationist game that we're running narratively. Okay.
Oh, no, Cortex can do anything. Don't worry about it. We gotta move on.
Fair enough.
Draven. Read it.
My hot take is that people use the term railroad way too often. I agree. They're almost always used wrong. Also agreed. Just because a GM has a plan and laid out a couple of paths doesn't mean that you're being railroaded. If the only way to have fun is to buck what the DM planned, you're the problem.
Agreed. Hard agreed.
I agree. I understand where the concept of railroading comes from and that it is completely misused, because there's a grand difference between I am building through the story with my players based upon what their choices are, and no, you can't do that. This must be the person that you meet, and you must go to this town, and that leads to this guy who eventually you'll be allowed to a fight, and if you win, then you can do the next thing. That is pathing, 100% linear pathing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Draven, 100%. And I think as a hot take goes, I think it's spicy. I think it's understandably, because I think the people who are like, wait, no, I know how to use the word railroad. No, you're wrong.
No, you don't. Here, eat this jalapeno.
Exactly. Keep this in your mouth while we explain this to you.
Yes. Please bite down directly on the habanero. Mm-hmm. No, I think that's correct. And also, I think that, you know, the whole, like, if you're there to buck with the DM plan, you're the problem. I think there's absolutely something to be said about leaning into the story, that the storyteller is trying to present to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they say, oh no, the princess has been captured by a dragon, heroes, won't you do something about it? It's your responsibility to say yes and follow where the story is.
Yeah.
I hear these stories about, like, oh no, the prince has been captured. Not our problem. We go to the left.
We're going to go to the bar.
Okay.
Well,
why are we here, guys?
Yeah.
You know, screw you too, would mm-hmm. be my response.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But that is grossly different than what happened to, you know, oh, we're on the ship. Oh, we're being followed. Oh, I'm just going to use this spell to get rid of the other ship. Well, damn it. And it's been dashed upon the shores. And the rest of your journey is perfectly safe. Oh. Did we screw something? Nope. Your journey's been perfectly safe. It's fine.
All right, Ashweather. Hey. Mechanics-heavy games are often easier to run up to a point. I'm not talking about, like, Hackmaster levels of complexity. Because they give the GM and players more scaffolding on how to deal with situations. Exactly why Heatsink likes GURPS.
100%. I agree with that statement.
Precisely.
Ash, not spicy at all.
I don't think that's spicy at all.
Beautiful statement.
Yep. I think that's a bell pepper.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
By the same token, I wouldn't run something like Lasers and Feelings for a new group because there's not enough structure there for new players to grab onto. All right. I'm going to say this one's a little spicy.
I agree.
Because I think it entirely depends on what your group is looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you have introduced role-playing games to this new group who has never played before as a simulationist sort of tactical board game with a story, I agree. Lasers and Feelings does not accomplish that goal, and you will confuse them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you know these people are people who need rules and structure to engage with a system, I agree, Lasers and Feelings does not provide that for you. However, if your people are looking for something, if you pose role-playing to them as a narrative storytelling game, like campfire egg timer stories,
mm-hmm.
But with some dice,
mm-hmm.
Then I think Lasers and Feelings is perfect. And I will say Lasers and Feelings has one up on a mechanics-heavier system in that it does not... The mechanics do not stand as a barrier of entry for your new players.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the big things that stops new players from engaging with a hobby is that we pose something like Dungeons and Dragons to them, where there are three core books and a stack of supplement books. And we say, let's play this game you need to now know the rules for. And people look at that and they go, oh, that's way too much. I don't want to study for finals all over again. I'll just play Halo.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also run into the problem where if people feel like they need to engage with the rules of the game to engage with the story through those rules, if they don't understand the rules, they won't engage with the story.
Right.
Right? Because they don't know, quote-unquote, what they can do.
Always a question.
Right? If you pose it to them as a narrative system of just, let's just tell a story. Just say what you're going to do, what you would do. Think of yourself as a person in the story,
mm-hmm.
and tell me what your character does as if they are just a person. Don't worry about the rules behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll figure out what rules we need, if the rules even need to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
They will feel far easier, far better about the answer to the question, what can I do, being anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 10 out of 10, totally agree. I feel that this is spicy, but I think it's spicy in the sense that if your framing is everyone believes role-playing is D&D simulationist, then yes, I agree. Lasers and Feelings is going to feel real awkward.
Yeah.
And be very hard to try and figure out.
This is cilantro spicy.
Yeah. Does it taste like something?
This tastes like ass to 30% of people, and is just fine to others.
Yeah, agreed. Yep. I think that's great. I think it's great. D&D 4th edition is actually among the best designed editions of the game. Fight me.
I will fight you right here now.
Best designed. That's an argument. If you're talking about hardcore simulationist, I would say 2nd edition did a better job of it.
It is the best designed board game I never wanted to play. Your take is trash, and it's not trash. It's just not a good role playing system. It's a great board game. You're correct. That's the truth.
Yeah. Was Baldur's Gate the new Baldur's Gate better than the previous Baldur's Gate? Because the previous Baldur's Gate was D&D 4th edition.
Previous Baldur's Gate was 2nd edition. It was a long time ago, buddy.
I don't think it was that long ago.
Baldur's Gate 2, Icewind Dale.
Baldur's Gate 2, Icewind Dale would have been...
2nd edition.
No.
Buddy.
No.
Okay, we'll look it up while I read Owenography's take here.
Go for it.
Owenography says, Cortex Prime's licensing rules before Direwolf took over and retracted them were perfectly fine. If you're making something for free for the community, you can, but reference the rules, don't write them out. If you want to make money, you can contact the owners of the game for a license. And OGL wouldn't work for Cortex because it's a system builder. That means no one would need the core rules, they just get the third-party book and be done with it. I don't know enough about this one. You said you looked some stuff up. I don't get into the nitty gritty of what the licensing thing was, but
so effectively there was some, in the purchasing and swapping, by the way, I've got my answer and you're wrong. In the purchasing and the swapping of Cortex through the times, it basically moved between two different companies. And in that, when Direwolf took it over.
Icewind Dale, based on Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition.
3rd edition of D&D was revised in 2000. Baldur's Gate was released in 2000.
Okay, but it didn't use 3rd edition rules, and it certainly didn't freaking use 4th like you just said.
I was thinking 3.5.
But... Yeah, it was released the same year, but it didn't. It was still AD&D 2nd edition. I mean, it's okay to be wrong.
We'll go back to this at some point.
I just solved it. It said Icewind Dale used AD&D 2nd edition rules. Boom, done. What's to argue?
Because I don't think it was Icewind Dale that I'm thinking of. Because there's... Never mind.
Shadows of Amn?
Yes.
Okay, that one I don't know.
Correct, which was the one that was released in 2000. But anyways, regardless, there's too many Baldur's Gates.
Still wasn't 4th edition rules.
Okay, true. All right, so as far as the license is concerned, yeah, Direwolf has pretty much screwed the licensing for Cortex Prime. I would tend to believe that Cortex Prime will probably never have anything new. We won't see a City of Mist kind of thing for Cortex Prime. That just gonna hold that there until I'm done with this thought.
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. That's
yes.
Fair.
I'm gonna hold the thing that says Shadows of Amn is an Advanced Dungeons and Dragons 2nd Edition computer role playing game in front of you.
Then I'll say this: 2nd Edition was better than 4th. Anyways, because I said that to start with.
Okay.
But regardless, on this, I would say that we won't ever see non base Cortex Prime stuff out of Direwolf. They have no reason to do it.
Yeah.
When fandom basically kicked the engine out because they were beholden to D&D at that point, Direwolf was a dump point, in my personal opinion. And they're just holding on to it. I'm not going to say that they're a terrible company, but I will say that they're not good at marketing Cortex and keeping it as an alive system. It's a paused position. In my personal opinion, I think the community is doing a much better job of holding it, and that is the unfortunate reality of that. Is it's not unlike Bethesda and freaking Skyrim, right? They'll just keep re-releasing gold and non-standard editions, right? But they're depending on the community to hold that up, which they're doing with Fallout as well, because Fallout 3 is getting re-released with a bunch of mods, but like nothing they built.
Right.
So, like, they're depending on their community to do everything. I think we're never going to see that with Cortex, sadly.
Yeah.
So I can agree that it's not so much a spicy take as just like...
It's sad.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
Yeah, it's a hot cup of tea in the rain.
So now we're going to get to the spicy take that I'm going to slam down my fist on.
Social mechanics in TTRPGs are poor. We're around a table. We can't swing swords or climb walls. You can have a conversation. Why do you really need narrative mechanics in the first place? The only reasons are either your table members aren't very mindful of each other, mm-hmm. or you're trying to roleplay a character who is cooler than you are. Mm. But dice can also bite you in the ass for those moments, too. In the end, having a fair GM and a good head is better than any social role I've ever seen in any game.
All right, Owen, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to tell you to take a giant step off of a very large cliff. And understand that I have a lot of feelings about this. I'm going to start with the fact that we can swing swords. We can climb walls. I can look at Matt or Steve and know the exact way that a fight should be able to go or not go. Mm-hmm. And for that, there are systems that don't need fight mechanics.
Yeah.
They just don't because it's unnecessary.
We can swing swords and climb walls. But we don't because we suck at them, and that's why we have stats on our character sheet that represent those things.
Also, you, as a storyteller, you can't calculate how someone's conversation is going to go in your head and have a perfect answer every time. If you can, you're Brennan. Great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, Brennan Lee Mulligan, yeah.
You've literally been doing it as a career actor for most of your life. Congratulations. Stay on SNL. Keep doing what you're doing. You know, run whole groups and walk circles around any actor that's in front of you.
Congrats on the decade of improv classes.
Yeah. But in truth, even for me, if I've got a well-versed player in front of me who is loquacious and thinks that they've got everything locked down, a social mechanic is what their character can do, not what the player can do.
Yeah.
If you're attributing what the player can do to what the character can do, then you're dissolving that line.
Yep.
And that's not what we're doing here. That's not what's going on. We are embodying the role of a character and its limitations. If I tell you that your character can't swing a sword because he lost his arm mechanically, you can't justify because you tie your arm behind your back and show me that you can do it. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
There's mechanics that tell you can't, just as much as I can tell you that no matter how much you swarthily told me those things, I rolled a die and it said you failed at your social check. So maybe in that moment, I suddenly think of, okay, yeah, something in what you said basically made him start to cry.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow you triggered a repressed feeling about his mother, and now he's leaning on you. You're not getting through that gate. He's keeping you here for the next half hour.
Yeah.
To dump his life story on you. You're stuck.
Right.
You didn't completely fail at what you did. You now have a personal friend who wants to take you to the bar.
We also collectively have at least two players at our table who generally have high anxiety
mm-hmm.
and don't like the spotlight being shown directly on them and having to think quickly on their feet.
Yeah.
They like being able to lean on the mechanics of their character
mm-hmm.
to get them through situations like that. Okay. I know if your wife says to me, I don't know. Karu's going to intimidate this guy. Like, I'm sorry. I can't think of how. I'm like, okay, no. I understand. You're feeling overwhelmed right now. It's fine. Please roll me an intimidate check.
Mm-hmm.
I know her character well enough to be like, your intimidate is an 8. That's a raise. So you loom at them and narrow your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And you make just a subtle shift forward of your weight. And they know you mean business, and you watch them look at each other, stare back at you, and take a visual step back.
Mm-hmm.
You've successfully intimidated them. You know they're not going to make a move.
Yeah.
You know?
And likewise, if someone's just like, I'm going to do this thing, they make the roll, and it's a failure, the table may even come up with a solution.
Exactly. Some of the best moments we've had at our tables is when someone goes, oh, I know what happened.
Yeah.
It happened like this. And so we're like, yeah, oh, God, that's so funny.
One of my favorite moments to date is a social thing that happened where a player who was a fae came back with a puppy dog from town where everybody else had been sneaking around picking up other things and getting to get themselves out of town. And one of the players basically rolled a perception check and without saying anything about the roll, looked immediately over and was just like, you put that baby back. Because they called their bluff. Now, did I, as a storyteller, feel that that's how that role should have gone? It didn't matter. And that's the core to all of this social. I understand that we're all people around the table, and at times, a role isn't necessary. But a role isn't necessary for social as much as it might not be necessary for combat.
Yeah.
If my fighter looks over and says, I punch him out.
He's the fighter. Of course he punches him out.
He's just a, he's literally a farmer. You just knocked him on his ass.
Yeah.
Like, that happened.
Yeah.
Don't but roll at the same time,
don't roll to hit. Don't roll damage.
If I've got a player sitting at my table who is blind, the player is blind, and they are trying to explain to me how they could perceive something and just want to roll the dice because they're not sure, I'm going to accept that accessibility tool.
Yeah.
And let them enjoy the effing game.
Exactly.
So don't. Do not discount mechanics as possible as they are a possible entry point for anyone to enjoy a role or a position through accessibility.
Exactly.
And that's my hard fight on this one.
The long and short of this is we're all playing characters that are cooler than we are.
In most cases.
Every single one of us is playing a character that's cooler than we are.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
All right. Hulavu, it's your turn, buddy. I see you there in the live chat.
This is happening.
All right, hot take, maybe you should consider just homebrewing a system to match the game you want to play. Hear me out.
Hmm.
I'm not saying you should start from absolute scratch, but there are many SRDs and engines, like 24XX and Cortex, which give you a good framework to start from. When you play a system, say 7C, you trade control over the story... Stop. down, boy! You trade control over the story for ease of the game. By necessity... choosing a system will limit the story you're telling to be aligned with the mechanics of the system. When I say to my players that we are playing Windrift, I maintain all control. If there's an issue in the rules, I just change it and say, I wrote that rule poorly. I get a lot more control in the long run because of the investment at the beginning. That being said, sometimes 7C is the best system for your game. Then you should play 7C. Just don't force your story into a differently shaped box that is a predefined system. I kind of hard agree with this, and I don't think this is a spicy take at all. I think our very first show, episode number one, was about picking the right system for your story.
I tend to agree with that statement. I think the most important part of this whole turn isn't so much the homebrewing, isn't so much the thing, but the fact that when you make a change, you open the communication lines to your player to say, I made this poorly. I am making the adjustments so we can keep moving. No different than a DM sitting at a table saying, hey, I want to grapple with this person, being like, I don't have time to go look up the grapple rules. Let's go with this.
Yeah.
And allow the system to help you craft something fast on the fly to be able to solve the issue.
Zombie Mouse says in the live chat, more nuanced the hot take, the less spicy it becomes. And I agree.
I think that's fair.
I agree. I think a spicy hot take is D&D is a trash system. Come fight me.
Yeah.
You know, but like when you're like, okay, but if it doesn't suck for your, you know.
But I would say in regards to this one, Hulavu, I agree. I don't think it's that spicy. I think it's a fine statement to like, don't corner yourself, I think is a great way of saying it.
This is the spicy hot take of he put in a lot of serrano peppers, but he put them in a big pot of chili, so it kind of watered them down a little.
Yeah, it worked out well.
Yeah, there is spice in there, but there's so many other flavors going on that, yeah, it's not spicy anymore.
Yeah. It's not, yeah. All right, also, I don't know if this is a hot take, but there is too much math in many of our games. I say this as a data scientist. Every time you have to make a roll, you're interrupting the flow of the story.
Preach if you, it!
If you have too much in the way of rolling, I can't invest in my story. If everything is determined by the laws of probability, my character is just a vessel for random chance.
Oh my god, it's true and you should say it. Oh, that I love this one.
That needs to be like a t-shirt or like a stitch on the wall.
I am handing you another Molotov cocktail so we can ramp this up from a 6 to a 7 alarm fire.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If there is too much random chance, I am just a... if everything is determined by the laws of probability, my character is just a vessel for random chance, and that is why I don't play OSR.
Yeah.
Random tables for this, random tables for that, random tables for the dungeon. It's all random encounters, but we make the story as we go along. It's all about player agency. No, it's not. It's about a... If you're not telling a story, if you don't have some sort of craft, some sort of idea of what's going on, if it's all just random and we make all the decisions, we're just faffing around and hoping the dice come up our way.
And not only that, there's no story.
Yeah.
It's just event after event after event, and it's, you know, that's no different than, like, I'm going to get in the car and go out for a ride with my friends tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we get shot, stabbed, drunk, high, whatever. Like, it's like, even Hot Tub Time Machine had a story.
I'll tell you what it is to me, and this is... Sean's going to hate this one.
Oh, boy.
This is No Man's Sky. This is the one reason I find No Man's Sky hard to get into. Because, oh, it's procedurally generated. There's millions of billions of planets, and they're all unique. Oh, look, this one's red. This one's yellow. This one has hills and weird creatures that look like they came out of the game Spore, and some interesting-looking cactuses on it. This one also has different creatures that look like they came out of the movie Spore, and hills, and interesting-looking rock formations on it. That's not uniqueness. That's just a different number coming up on your random number generator.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't do anything for me.
It's reading tea leaves or bones and trying to make a narrative from random things that fall out of the cup. No.
Knocks in the box.
No.
You are... No.
No. No. I disagree. I disagree. That is not like here.
Will everybody please hold while I fist fight Rob?
First off, reading tea leaves and bones means you're getting a reference idea that is not an exact statement. Whereas if I am playing GURPS, it physically tells me...
D3 Knowles.
It tells me D3 Knowles, or it tells me this is the exact damage that will occur and how much depth the hole will be. I can't say it's the death card. What does the death card mean? At that point, I can come up with a meaning for it. So my reference...
Heatsink posts a gif of a guy throwing a wedding ring into a trash can.
Yep.
My God.
Yep. But the only reason why I know it's not him is he'd never wear those shoes. But the tea leaves or bones is a ephemeral statement. It's not...
They're nice shoes.
But he'd never wear those.
Yeah, he would.
I don't think he'd wear those shoes.
Oh my God.
They're like suede or something.
You better back up off my man's sense of style.
No, dude, he always wears shiny shoes. Come on. I know your man's sense of style.
He wears dress shoes.
Right, those aren't dress shoes. Those are, like, loafers.
I don't know. It's a low-quality gif. I can't tell.
In any case, what I'm basically saying is that Nox is saying that is using a general reference, right, point. This is a... this is something that is speculative. You can make a decision about what's coming off the roll. It's a, there's an opportunity or there's a consequence. It's not telling you what that consequence is. In an exacting scientific data sense, you're given those things. And so you don't get a chance to have an if come. It's a Boolean answer.
Yeah, right? All right.
And that's why I'm saying it is different. It is vastly different in there because it's not... You can't do data science off of tea leaves.
Right. Tea leaves is more like you got three successes. What does that look like?
Correct.
Yeah, which is what we try to do.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on.
All right.
How spicy was that take?
Ooh.
I'm handing him more Molotovs on that one.
I think so. We're good on that one.
Yep. Have a can of gas.
Nevum.
Nevum, in most games, it seems there are too many rules and substitutes to handle combat situations.
Sub-rules.
So this is actually a question. Should TTRPGs free some space for other elements of the game, treat other parts of the game, social and investigation, as combat rules do?
Okay, so here's my thing. I think too many games look at combat rules as a necessity and should really be looking at their social mechanics and revamping the system. tiny D6. Everything's 2D6. Why are you making it different?
Yeah.
Why is combat super important to you? If that is a important part of the game, then the game is a combat game.
Yeah.
But if your game is a open designed game that can have combat, it's a conflict resolution system,
yeah,
then that's what you need to do with them. So it's not so much offloading Nevim that I would agree with, but I would say level it. I think you've gone too far into it. And to that hot take, I will say even the last system that we looked at in Eureka, their combat system takes away from the meaning of the game,
yeah,
which
I
is a deep social dive into what makes what is acceptable as human.
Yeah, it's an investigation game with a good deep dive into us as human beings. And honestly, if they wanted to just keep the combat lethal, I think they accomplished that when they said a bullet does 4 damage to your 5 hit points.
Yeah, and not to say that you couldn't have variances to say, like, bullets are dangerous no matter what happens to them.
Right.
You can just make the consequences of a bullet not hitting still be dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's fine. You don't have to go into super mechanics for it.
Yeah, I don't think you need 2 chapters worth of intricate combat rules because at that point, your rules inform what how your game mm-hmm. wants to be played. Okay, so you've got an entire chapter dedicated to gun combat. Do you want gun combat to be a thing? That's what your rules are telling me are important. You've waited just as much on gun combat as you have investigation. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think you can cut that entire chapter out and you save yourself a lot of room.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it's spicy in the game design community because they're like, yeah, wait a second. And the answer is, how long did you play D&D before you made the system?
I've personally never understood why combat rules are so much more special than any other rules. Why does combat need to be simulationist into the minutiae of rounds and individual attacks and individual sources of damage? Like,
because it's cool.
Why is it not a sweeping narrative mechanic much like anything else? You know, I like when I read Blades in the Dark, I was so refreshed by that system.
Yeah.
Of just, yeah, combat broke out. We took some bumps and bruises, but we beat them.
Yeah.
But who punched who? Who cares?
Yeah.
Everybody was punching everybody else, but we beat them.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yep.
Lucid.
Call of Cthulhu sanity rules are pretty terrible and require extensive homebrewing to be passable.
I don't remember enough about the sanity rules.
I did a review on them when I was doing the mechanics.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say you're wrong.
I think my main problem with sanity rules in general is that mental health is a very personal thing. And it's heavily stigmatized in a lot of ways. And so when you start being like, oh, this person went insane. And I mean, there was a section in the old Palladium rule books.
Yes.
That said where, like, if you suffer some sort of neuroses or something like that, you can go insane and become homosexual as one of the outcomes for that.
Correct.
Of like, okay, so homosexuality is an insanity. In your
it's a deviation.
That's how we're framing it.
Yeah.
Okay, buddy.
It's a deviation from the norm. But once you pull that cover off, you have to look at the rest of it, and you recognize how the book is written.
I mean, I'm queer and I'm crazy, not because I'm queer, but just, you know.
Sure. But I think one of the things about what Luce is saying at the end here is players don't like losing agency.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's my angry turn on that whole piece is that, yes, Call of Cthulhu sanities are pretty terrible and require extensive homebrewing to be passable. That might be true. But they're a guideline for the players because it is an important key to the Call of Cthulhu universe that they're trying to hold on to.
I agree.
Much as combat is dangerous and therefore we're going to explain how dangerous it is,
mm-hmm.
Call of Cthulhu is about not losing sanity as much as Vampire the Masquerade was supposed to be about not losing humanity.
Exactly.
Exactly. So in that sense, you can't say you can't do the D&D thing and say I might be at 1 hit point, but I'm 100% still functional.
Right, right.
Like
that's up to you to take that cue and be like I'm at 20 sanity out of 100. You know, my character's acting real squirrely right now.
But it gives you all the guidelines for what that's supposed to be. Now,
exactly.
Is it too narrow? Is it defining it too tightly? Probably. Is it forcing you into those boxes? Possibly.
Yeah, it's one of the mechanics that unfortunately requires player buy-in.
Correct.
Of like, your character's going insane, and you have to be a player that says, okay, I'm going to lean into that, because right. that sounds fun to me, and we all agreed to play Call of Cthulhu, and I know what this game is about.
Exactly. You exactly. know? But if you're playing it Pulp Adventure, you are 100%...
We bring it back around to Call of Cthulhu devolves into Pulp Adventure.
Which
exactly.
I think it does.
And
I...
at that point, you look at it, and you go, I don't like losing agency. I'm not going to act crazy.
Well, and you don't have to get all squirrely about it, but the proof of the matter is the fact that you're looking at Call of Cthulhu in a different... You're looking at it in a heroic light.
Right, right, right.
And therefore, sanity does remove your ability to be a hero because it is crippling you.
But if you're playing it as a horror game, it can be fun to spiral out of control and contribute to the horror. To the
well,
horror
I would say the other aspect of that is that literally it is the only thing that really counts as relative hit points within that world.
Fair enough.
And hit points is a bad example. Let me rephrase that. Yeah, yeah. Constitution. So yeah, I would say... I agree with some of the deframing there, but yeah, if you're looking at Call of Cthulhu as a heroic adventure game with spooky elements, then yeah, it's a terrible mechanic. You don't play with it then. Figure a different way of doing sanity. But then again, don't play Alien either, because you're going to hate that one too.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I don't know, what do you call this on the heat scale?
I think it actually sits pretty hot. Because people who love Call of Cthulhu are probably going to hate the fact that I just said it's pulp adventure with spoopy elements.
I'm going to call this mango habanero.
Okay. A little fruity.
I think it's definitely spicy, mm-hmm. but I think the sweetness of it takes the edge off. I think there's a secondary mitigating factor that makes it not so bad.
Okay, okay, I like that. Okay, Zombie Mouse. Any dice system that uses 1D or 1D20 or 1D100 is bad because the bell curve is flat and it makes all skill bonuses useless. No.
Yes. I'm gonna agree with him. It's because if you're using one single die to get your mechanics, there's... Yeah, he's right. The bell curve is flat. Like, mechanically,
correct.
It is linear.
I don't necessarily think that it makes all skill bonuses useless.
But the antipodes of the probability curve are equally likely as the center. You have no bell curve. It's flat.
It is a flat line.
Whereas even if you upgrade that to 2d6, it becomes a bell curve.
Correct.
With 7
correct.
In the middle.
Correct. Mechanically, you were absolutely correct. Because my first thought went to, let's look at every other game that's a board game that uses the same mechanics, and it's a flat line. Like, did I make my armor safe?
Yeah.
Like, that right there.
And that's why, like, you know, people, like, cheering, like, oh my god, it's a nat 20! Like, it's a 5% chance to get a nat 20. It's the same thing as cheering over, oh my god, you got a natural 18! It's the same probability.
On the other hand, if you're rolling with advantage or disadvantage, now there's some math there.
Right, now there's some math, because you've introduced a second die in there. Mm-hmm. Rolling two 20s on 2d20 is a 1 in 400 chance.
It's pretty incredible.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say this is a hot take, but I think it's definitely sits within that scape of, like, don't do this shit.
Yeah.
Like, we're role playing here. Don't do this shit.
Yeah, this is scorpion hot. Not scorpion pepper hot, scorpion hot.
I would
don't
say this.
Touch the pointy bit and you'll be fine.
If it doesn't involve characters,
yeah.
Sure. One, you're just rolling for a random chance.
Mhm.
Like, oh, what's in this town? A blacksmith? And a cobbler.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You don't need a bell curve for that, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Kaliki.
Kilki.
Or Kilki, I'm sorry. Relying on cinematic grammar while presenting the fiction is bad role-playing.
So, unfortunately, Kilki, I think, posted this. Kilki's over in, what, Finland, I think?
I think so.
Several
hours ahead of us.
So somewhere nearly on the other side of the world from us. So I believe Kilki probably posted this one before they went to bed.
Possibly.
Because I asked for clarification on the Discord and did not receive it.
It was just tumbleweeds.
I'm willing to bet it's middle of the night for them. So I'm not really entirely 100% sure on what relying on cinematic grammar is while presenting fiction. But if we're guessing, it is the idea of framing tabletop role-playing interactions as things like scenes and actors and acts, act one, act two, you know, things like that. I don't know.
While presenting the fiction is bad role playing.
I'm going to call this one Serrano Pepper Hot because it kind of creeps up on you a little.
Yeah, because there's aspects of this that I agree with in the sense that we use, even in this show, we have used a lot of movie references and book references and story points to describe how to tell narrative stories.
Right, right.
It is not to say that you should be writing a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And having your players play through it. Your players play characters within it.
Yeah, yeah.
Many people do that, and it feels like railroading. But at the same regard, like, understanding what the hero's journey is an important narrative tool for a DM to keep in their mind when they're watching someone play. To understand what forces sit around them to interact with those moments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you understand that, I mean, it's like understanding the psychology of a character, right? And what it takes within that scope and understanding to be able to say, you know, if this is what they're doing, like, oh, this is a redemption arc. They want to be redeemed. Okay, what things go into a redemption arc?
Right, right.
You have to understand the components that go into that to make it a story. Otherwise, they're not gonna feel redemption. They're not gonna achieve what the player wants that character to progress to as their next step.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I look at things like where it's places where stories fell flat and viewers looked at it because they were invested in their characters that were on the screen.
Yeah.
It was funny. I was actually, I was in the car with somebody and we were having a discussion about, the difference. And they were talking about someone who, like their grandmother or something, who was so invested in soap operas that when they talked to someone else about them, that person couldn't tell if they were talking about characters or someone just that they knew until they brought up that it was, oh, no, this is in Days of Our Lives. And she was just like, oh, for God's sakes, I don't give two shits about those people. But she was talking about them as if they were people in her life. And I think to a degree, as we progress into campaigns and extended adventures, multiple sessions, we become attached to our characters in a very personal way. And because of that, we have hopes, and we see their hopes, we see their dreams, we see moments within their lives that we want to either happen or we want to experience with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to facilitate those is to be aware of them as a storyteller, to recognize that that's what's going on so that you don't present a situation that will fall flat, that doesn't have meaning or reference to them. And I think for me, when we stop losing some of those cinematic or narrative tool sets that are out there that writers have, that storytellers have created, that mimic, and I say mimic because they are not life, they mimic life, we can understand what it means to go through those with the characters, so that you're not defining something and railroading them into something, but you keep presenting the bumps in the road to get through to the points that they're expecting. You did this with me, mm-hmm. in my character. You saw a situation where my character was had done something terrible,
mm-hmm.
and yet was trying to be a very righteous person. And then heard all of the components that made up to it so that you could show it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it was up to me as the player looking through the lens of my character is, how is he going to handle this?
Yeah.
Where is he going to grow from this? What does it mean? And then for you to just be like, okay, now we've moved into this next part.
Mm-hmm.
But without the narrative framing tools in your own mind of, okay, he needs to have a mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a tool. That's a narrative tool.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's where that comes into. Just as much as anything that has to do with any of the other, like, romance, tragedy, redemption, fear, all of those things have tool sets that go along with them. And so I think cinematic grammar comes into that when you're presenting the fiction. And I don't consider it bad role-playing. But I could see, from a player's perspective, using some of those tools as a player,
mm-hmm.
Where things could feel very, I don't know, not role-playing anymore. Like, I'm just acting.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would say, Kilkey, come back with this. If you get a chance to answer this one, I would be interested in even talking about this next week if we're off base on what we're discussing.
Yeah.
And we probably are. But I still think it spiced us up a little bit of, like, what are you really trying to say here?
Yeah, yeah,
what is
yeah.
this moment? Like, is there something here? Is this cinnamon? Or is this nutmeg? Like, what is in this? What is this spice?
Yeah, I think, I'm gonna call this one wasabi hot.
Okay.
I'm gonna call it wasabi hot because when you said it was using this in when presenting the fiction is bad role playing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what we're looking for in a hot take.
It's, you know, a good hot take.
That's exactly what we were looking for, is something to slap us and make us want to fight over it.
Yeah.
So I think this one bit me. I think it ran roughshod through my sinuses,
mm-hmm.
made me clench my fist and punch a pillow until it went away, and then it was gone, and I felt refreshed.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we've had a chance to talk it out, and yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you on all points.
Yeah. So it was long-winded answer for a very short question.
But it was a thought-provoking take, and that's what I really liked about it. So,
no, I absolutely love it. So.
All right, friends, I want to thank each and every single one of you who on the Discord submitted these ahead of time, and those of you who joined us in the live chat today and submitted yours live on the air.
We so appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Like, honestly, we're overwhelmed by the response for this.
This has been so much fun.
And every single one of these. Like I said, we called some of your takes trash and told you you should feel bad. No, we love every single
love
one
you
of you. This was all, you know, this was in fun. We love and respect every single one of you, and we hope your games go great going into the future.
Yeah, so we have, I'm going to say this out loud,
yeah.
Two shows left,
my God.
Two shows left. Our next show, we're going to be talking about the games we want to play in the future and why we want to play them.
Yeah, we kind of have, like, you know, everybody has, like, that TV list of, like, oh, yeah, I'll put that up. Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that movie yet. I'll put it on the list. We don't actually have a list, but, like, we kind of have a list. We've gone 5 years doing this show, and we've spotlighted a lot of different systems. And in looking for systems to spotlight and researching topics and whatnot, we've come across a lot more that we haven't spotlighted. And a lot of them have kind of ended up on a side pile of going, oh, I'm totally going to run this.
Yeah.
So I think we want to have a discussion about not only what those games are, we want to discuss why they're on our short list of games, what we kind of expect out of them, how we're challenging ourselves with some of these games, because some of these are not our wheelhouse.
Not in the least.
Like, I was like, oh, I want to run this setting. I'll just probably do it in Savage Worlds. And Rob looked me square in the eye and was like, stop playing Savage Worlds.
Yeah.
Get out of Savage Worlds.
Do something else. I don't care what.
It's a good system. I love it. I absolutely love it. But do something else. Challenge yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I'm trying to lighten up my load.
Yeah. And so. Probably why you didn't jump into Savage Seas.
No. No. That's got to be set off to the side.
Yeah. It's like more Savage Worlds. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll be getting to that. Now, one of the things I will say, and it was funny, was that I didn't intend on opening up the live chat to everybody, but I'm glad I did. We're happy to have you, Zombie. Going forward, I'm just going to leave the live chat open for May.
Yeah.
So that everybody can join in and have fun with it, and you guys can all be here and be part of it.
Let's just have a party, yeah.
And please, I know you guys are out there. If there are questions or even more hot takes, I'll even take them. Submit them. Put them in our questions so we can discuss these things. We'd love to talk to you. We've had 5 years of this. There's got to be other questions for other shows out there that you guys have for us. I know some of them hit in our episode discussions on the Discord, and those have been really fun to see people talking about some of our old shows and asking points at them or making their own references. So please, by all means, keep that up. Keep sending us stuff. We love that. This was so much fun to hear from all of you. And it really humbled us a little bit too.
It really was.
That you guys came through and presented us with some amazing stuff.
Absolutely blown
away. But we'll talk about, we'll be happy to talk about anything. If you guys have stuff from our old shows or anything like that, we'd honestly, if you've got some turnarounds on some of these outtakes, we'll take those as well.
Yeah, man. Parry and riposte. Let's go.
Yeah.
Just do us a favor though. Take it to the, if you're on the Discord, take it to the questions discussion.
Yes.
For any
of the reposts.
We do try to keep the show questions for specifically show questions. If discussion starts breaking out there, it just makes it harder for us to find questions that have been posted by people that they want answered on the air. So if you've got more spicy hot takes or anything like that, just take it to the questions discussion part of the Discord, and we'll be happy to spar with you there.
So Zombie Mouse, sorry for you coming late to the game. Yeah, we decided back in December, for some of you that are just now probably listening to us, because we have a bunch of people who just joined us. Like, I saw some new people signing up on YouTube for our channel.
Mm-hmm.
We decided back in December that we were going to end on our 5th anniversary, which is in 2 shows.
Mm-hmm.
And we would stop live recording. Now, we're not getting rid of the Discord. We're not going to get rid of... The shows aren't going to disappear. They're going to still be there. We'll still be around.
Yeah.
And... In all honesty, Sarah and I might do a recording here or there and publish it. Like, mm-hmm. we don't know where things are going to go, but we're going to stop the every Wednesday thing right off the bat. We need a break.
We have literally never missed a Wednesday except for one, I think. And that was, like,
one.
Very recent, where you were laid out with COVID or something like that.
Yeah, we missed one single episode.
Yep.
We had a few that were a little weird, but no, we've hit every episode, which is... kind of a testament for every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about that on in our last show. But I'm sorry that you're. But we've got a lot of episodes to go back through, so please
enjoy. Right, you've got hella backlog, dude. So
yeah. But you may still hear us from time to time. We'll post stuff up, but we're definitely going to keep the Discord. The conversations are still going. We're still going to talk to you guys about our games as things come through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll go from there. And we're going to encourage people to keep talking. Our community is amazing.
Yeah,
I love the community we've built.
I was going to say that's the best part of it. The best part of our Discord is that I only post there. But, you know, occasionally Rob posts there probably twice as much as I do. He's probably a lot more vocal about it. But
we need to talk about how we plan a show. Wow.
How we plan a show? Oh, Jesus. Yeah, well, we'll get into that one later. We were running super, little bit, hour and 45-minute long show tonight, so.
Fuck it. We had really great stuff tonight. The material was fantastic.
We did. But let's not get bogged down. See here. Hot take. Straight Talk Conclave is the best podcast of all time. Thank you so much, Lulu.
We appreciate you guys.
It's banana pepper hot.
All right. Let me get this rolling for our outro.
Alrighty, you can find us on Twitter at @ST_Conclave, on Instagram at @ST_Conclave. This is live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on mixlr.com/storyteller-conclave. And join us up on our Discord, give us your spicy hot takes so we can fist fight you on the air.
Yes.
You can find that link on our Twitter as well as our website, storytellerconclave.com.
We'd like to thank our Patreon members, especially our name members who help us out every single month. Knox in the Box, Subject, The Arcane Asylum, Hulavu, Sam, Sean, and Sparkle Motion. We appreciate all your support. Our pre-show music is by Arcane Anthems. You can find them on Instagram or Patreon or YouTube Music or any number of other places now as Arcane Anthems. Our intro music is Beyond the Warriors by Geefrog. You can find that at geefrog.bandcamp.com or on YouTube Music. And our outro music, which you're hearing right now, is Only Our Footprints in the Sand by Midair Machine. You can find them at freemusicarchive.org.
And a big shout out to our families, Vicky and Sean.
Thank you
so much for loving and supporting us. All of our friends who set our tables gave these great stories to share with you over the years, and you, every single one of you, are listening. Listeners, we love you so much.
Love you guys.
Good night.
Good night.